Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 55. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is a cast of pottery. A cast of pottery. We've changed the show a little. We're going to be molding some vases. This is the cast where we look at the future. And joining us to help predict the future is Nicole Lee, mobile reviews editor at CNET.com. Welcome, Nicole.
Hello. Hi, everyone. I'm actually podcasting from CNET. In a hoteling station.
Hoteling station is where they stick visiting dignitaries when they don't have an office for them.
Yep.
So what is it? Is it hoteling station because it's a place where people who stay in hotels would be when they come in the office and hang out?
I have no idea.
I think there's some relation to the idea of a hotel being a temporary place, yes.
I was hoping there would be fold-out beds here, but there aren't any. So
it is
probably a hotel.
It's all the cutbacks. Nicole is also a host of Geeks on Glee. If you're a fan of that show, you might want to check that out as well. I think
someone very close to you, Tom.
Teresa's not that close. She's down in Orange County. Oh, you mean my wife? My wife Eileen is on that show as well.
Okay.
But she's not joining us. Ron Loop of DarthNerd.com is joining us, who is also a former Hurricane Katrina refugee.
Whoa.
Refugee.
Or Fuji.
Oh, yeah.
So, and you're also, aren't you a lawyer or something like that?
I've been a paralegal for the last 10 years. Worked for an attorney's office here in Houston, Texas, where I ended up living after the city of New Orleans was wiped out.
Wow. So are you a permanent resident? Where are you living now?
Houston.
Okay.
West side of Houston.
Okay, on the NASA side. No, wait.
Yeah.
On the other... Yeah, okay. Right. And you're starting a villains podcast? You're starting some villainy? Explain.
DarthNerd.com will be a podcast focused on all the darker aspects of the internet. Basically, doing character profiles of just about every villain in geekery that you can imagine. Scorpius from Farscape, the
Darth Vader, maybe a little Darth Vader.
Darth Vader,
yeah,
Sith
sure.
Empire.
Yep, got it.
This will be a very, very long-lasting podcast. I can already foresee it.
That sounds like a great idea for a podcast because evil never gets you
evil
never get tired
never
of talking about
gets
evil.
Old.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's start with a prediction from one of our listeners. Thanks to Andy for writing in to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. He says, "Hey Tom, Scott, and guests, I have a prediction about the future of agriculture." Now, bear with me. That may sound boring to you, but let me tell you, he gets to something really interesting here. Sometime, likely in the next 5 to 15 years, there'll be another outbreak of mad cow disease or something possibly worse that will completely cripple the beef industry. And this will lead us to a new source of red meat. The obvious choice will be bison, since they're both native to America. They're kosher. However, there are still a lot of protective regulation around bison. So another popular source will be giraffes.
Whoa.
Giraffe meat is also kosher. Plus, giraffe farms will thrive in wooded areas where farming wasn't possible before without deforestation. Everyone wins, except maybe the cows.
Oh, Andy, gross, dude! I'm trying to think of a zoo animal I would rather not eat. And I think gorillas are right up there. Possibly any of the other monkey-style animals, any of the primates. Not interested in that. But then a very close second or third to that would probably be giraffe. I don't know what giraffe meat's like, but that is really weird. I'm trying to imagine just herds of giraffe.
That's what I want to see. I want to drive down the interstate and be like, hey, we're out in the country now. Look at that big herd of giraffes on the hillside.
Galloping through the hills.
And then and instead of like these empty pastures, you have to clear of all the woods, you'd actually plant trees because that's what the giraffes eat.
Oh, right. So we don't, instead of, tearing up the ground and having to kind of reseed that all the time, they're tearing up trees. That seems like a brilliant idea. Are we also milking these giraffes for the milk we don't get anymore because the cows are wiped out.
Giraffe milk.
Well, just imagine actually hitting a giraffe as it's crossing the road with your car.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, no, they'll have giraffe guards on the front of your car.
Yeah.
They'll be a little taller. You won't be able to see over them.
Yeah. Attached to the front of your car.
Giraffe kebabs. Yeah. I like
it. Just seems really alien to me. Like that the whole look and feel of herding giraffes around and stuff is like a, I don't know, it's like an episode of Futurama on Mars where they're herding around those giant bugalos or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, weird thing to see. I just can't imagine that. But hey, whatever, man. We need our meat. If we don't have it in cows anymore, we got to look elsewhere. I guess the giraffe will have to do.
Well, you know, it makes sense when you think about it. Even in Australia, they have kangaroo meat. I mean, they eat kangaroo over in Australia.
Yeah.
So it's whatever you have around, right?
You can eat pretty much anything.
Yeah.
Unless it's poison.
You can eat what's in that kangaroo's pocket if you're really hungry.
The whatever baby kangaroo? Oh, you're talking about kangaroo veal here? That's disgusting. Kangaroo baby killer.
Well, ostrich was growing in popularity here in the South.
Oh, yeah, because like ostrich is a good red meat. I know.
That's good. Yeah, it's very lean, I hear.
So it's considered a red meat. I figured it was like chicken in there. No?
No. Ostrich burgers. Bison burgers are kind of old hat now. Ostrich burgers are the new bison burger.
Weird. Yep. That's also weird.
And giraffe milk comes in tall boys.
Wow. Gross.
All right, let's move on. Let's move into our main. What was that, Ron?
I said I was hoping at some point the ostrich would replace the horse. Like we would actually just
ride around ostriches. With ostriches. Oh man!
Everybody looks like they're Warcraft characters riding their ostriches.
Riding around
that
the
idea. Now that I could get behind. You guys have me on that one. Milking them and eating them and stuff. I don't know. We're riding around. Sign me up.
I'm taking the giraffe to work, honey. Leave the ostrich for you. All right, short-term predictions. Let's start with those. These are the things you think will happen sooner than later, maybe in the next few years. By the way, email forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to Andy again. We'll start with our short-term predictions with you, Nicole Lee. When you look into your small crystal ball, what do you see?
My small crystal ball. So this is a very specific topic, but it's what I do day in and day out. I cover cell phones. So I think, you know, all of these smartphones out right now, Android smartphones, your iPhone and all that. And then they're kind of leaving the quote unquote dumb phone behind, right? Like the small little phone that you just make calls on, the little flip phones. So I think in, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years, those phones will be relegated to like typewriter status. Like what the typewriter is now, it will be what the, like, really dumb phone, flip phone will be. Like, the phone that just makes calls will be like, what? It just makes calls? Seriously? Like,
When you go to the thrift store, they'll just have, like, walls full of flip phones?
Yeah, it'll be like a novelty item. It'll be like a thing that you get just for the novelty status of it. Just for, like, you have it. Whereas, like, the whole idea of a smartphone will be pretty much in everything. Like,
I even went the most to the antiques mall the other day, and I picked up this lovely Motorola Razr.
Whoa.
Speaking of Razr, I actually used my old Razr to prop up the end of my bookshelf that's shorter so that it would be level. That's what I'm using my Razr for right now.
There you go.
Wow.
A functional furniture item.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you what I've done with a couple of flip phones. I have some nieces who are really into sort of looking hip and like they're, you know, way grown up. And so they like walking around and playing dress up and getting purses and all this kind of stuff. And when those girls are, you know, 6 or 7 years old, I took some old flip phones we had laying around, gave them these flip phones. They were in heaven. They're walking around like they're talking to their friends and setting lunch dates and all this garbage. So, yeah, they're starting to look pretty antique. I never thought that would happen. Yeah. I mean, remember when flip phones looked like this amazing technology and couldn't believe phones had come that far. And we were looking back at those big bricks of the late 80s and thinking, man, those, you know, cancer bombs were terrible. I can't believe we've come so far. But now, you know, we've got these, you know, stuff that basically looks like that. And I don't know what's next, but whatever it is, it sure made those look pretty antiquated.
Yeah, I figure Japan has been leading the way for a while now, and they've pretty much all moved on to quote unquote smartphones for a long time. So I think we're moving that way.
Well, the smartphone is all screen. I mean, you hold up an iPhone these days, and you can't really tell what it is because all smartphones kind of look like a big black slab until you turn them on.
there are smartphones that don't look like that. I mean, there are a variety of form factors that you have the little keyboard and all that. So I don't think that's going away maybe in, you know, 5 years or whatever. But I do think, you know, even the most basic quote-unquote phone will have a lot of email functionality, a lot of the browsing functionality that you have a lot, that you have in a lot of smartphones nowadays.
Well, we're going to have the implanted heads-up screen display and with the in-ear receiver that we just kind of pop in. You won't even know.
Futurama, wasn't it? I think that was in Futurama.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be real, like the giraffe.
Well, there's already talk about a contact lens that you install that gets a wireless connection from a chip that you have somewhere implanted on your body.
Now we're talking.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brain phone.
Yeah. Mm. Or even not as permanent as something, you know, implanted, but gets a some sort of heads-up display connection from that chip.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of being able to sort of, I don't know. I hate to make comparisons to the Kinect, which was just released recently from Microsoft, and I'm not even that excited about Kinect. I feel like it's a baby step towards something better. But this idea of having our hands free, but do the things that we're used to doing. In that case, it's gaming. The idea of having a future where we either communicated or manipulated our world without having to use our hands all the time, so we could use our hands for other things. So I can be building something and talking to somebody. We do that now with, you know, wireless communications, you know, with earpieces and things like that. But being able to talk to somebody, work on some woodworking project, have them say, oh, do you know so-and-so's email, and be able to pause for a second, have that flip up in front of your face and say, yeah, it's this, I'm sending it now, and think about sending it and off it goes. That seems like a future I could definitely live in as I dine on a luscious, medium rare giraffe steak placed before me.
With a little Worcestershire. All right. So we'll take that. We'll put that over there and then move down to the next prediction from you. Ron, when you look into your short-term prediction crystal ball, what do you see?
Well, as I said, I was a Katrina refugee. Scott talks a lot about always wanting, you know, liking stories that it's all apocalyptic and everything's destroyed. There's not very much society. For about 3 weeks in the city of New Orleans, it was pretty much that, you know, Book of Eli situation. For the next 5 to 10 years, I see hurricane after hurricane hit, and we are not prepared for it. The city of New Orleans again will flood, and several other cities on the Gulf Coast will flood. The government response will be just as bad because there's no way to prepare for something that destructive. And those particular states will get sick of the government and try to secede, and there'll be another mini civil war.
Wow. All right. I got a question for you then. So when you were there and you kind of experienced a lot of this firsthand, and you mentioned it kind of became a dystopian looking future city anyway. My experience in New Orleans, having been there a few times, is that the city already kind of has that weird quality. It kind of feels like Fallout 3 a little bit as you walk through some of the streets and deal with some of the older parts of the city. And it just is a little bit haunted and abandoned, and those weird grave, gravestones, everything's above ground, they're all mausoleums and stuff. That stuff is just freaky weird. And has kind of that Mad Maxian futuristic, the world has ended sort of feel to it anyway. And then when they get clobbered with something that bad, and my wife's got family all around there, and most of them ended up moving out west. To sort of avoid this stuff in the future. But it seems like if this happens again, you're going to have, if it wipes them out hard enough, what is it about that will make them go, that's it, we're okay to secede and we can totally fight the government? Like, where will that power come from? How will they actually stand up and be able to defend themselves in a way that will create a successful secession? Or are you saying they won't successfully secede?
They will not successfully secede. They do not have the manpower. They don't have the money. I think the city of New Orleans is almost like a third world country before Katrina hit. The fact that it took so long, we were completely disappointed in the reaction time. There's a lot of finger pointing and so on and so forth. But I think it will happen again. There is no way to prepare for it. The people of New Orleans will bounce back as they did with Katrina. But the faith that we had in the government's reaction is definitely going to be shaken to the point where we're going to have no faith in their ability to cope with a disaster in such a way.
Yeah, I guess the main question is, how do you have the confidence to try to succeed in this situation if you don't have the resources that you need and you've just suffered a disaster, whether it's New Orleans or Alabama, anywhere along that coast?
The Mississippi River.
Yeah, yeah. And
shut down the port of New Orleans.
You got leverage. That's what you're saying. Okay, I get it. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's not the lifeline to the country that it used to be, but you could sure put a hurt on things, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, especially industry and chemicals.
Here's the question I have for you. So you're from there. You spent a considerable amount of your life there. You may return there one day. Who knows? But what is it in the hearts and minds of New Orleans folks? And I'm not saying that, and this isn't a me going, man, how come those people don't just get out of there? That place is a death trap. It's going to get hit 50 times by this stuff. They're going to flood 500 more times, and they're still going to be standing there trying to take it and make it better. What do you think there'll ever come a day where people will just kind of go, you know what? We're way below sea level. We're this huge target for natural disaster. It's just going to kind of keep happening. We really ought to go for higher ground. Forgetting about all the issues and politics involved with like relocation and population shift of that type to other parts of the country or even the state of Louisiana. What happens to finally get people to say that's a bad place for a city? And again, I'm not saying it's not a cool city or that they don't have a great history. All that stuff is true. I'm just saying, is there a time in your mind in the future where they can be convinced that they're way too low and in a bad spot for this to happen every other, August?
There is nothing to convince the people of New Orleans to move. Mm. It's something that's ingrained. It's home with a capital H. We survive.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Well, look at Venice, right? I mean, I know you don't have the hurricane issue there, but that city is sinking. It is going under. And there's nothing anyone can do about it, but people aren't moving. They're trying to figure out how to save everything they can because it's tradition. They've been there that long. New Orleans isn't, a small percentage of the age of Venice. But you still have people who've been there a long, long time. It's got a long history. And I think because it's different from the rest of the country, because it has a separate history, its origins in French occupation, Spanish occupation, I think gives it a little more pride. It's, anywhere that can say, hey, we're different, we're special, we need to preserve this, feeds that mentality, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Not only that, but you can't get etouffee or gumbo of that quality anywhere else.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I'll go down there and sandbag to save beignets for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our long-term predictions. These are the longer view, more of in 100 years, we'll all eat flying cheese sort of predictions. And we'll stick with you, Ron. What do you see in your long-term?
The city of Houston, my new home, has Rice University. Rice University they're on the cutting edge of nanotechnology as far as little micro machine robots that they get to do stuff. My long-term prediction is that nanotechnology, we will invent a nanobot that we will inject into our bodies that everyone will have to have. It will cure all disease, and a certain portion of the population will be able to turn the aging off on their body. You'll have to have a test to get this particular option checked off. IQ, something you have to prove that you can contribute to the society. Okay.
Uh-huh.
If you pass this test, you in essence live forever. However, this also stops crime, because if they suspect that you have committed or are committing something, then They flip a switch, and suddenly your life functions are terminated.
Wow. This sounds like a combination of Minority Report and Gattaca. I'm going to call it Guy Morty Report. And
Repatica.
Medica.
Right. So the idea that you could, first of all, we would kind of, you know, be able to pick and choose who we wanted to have around us and who gets to survive and who doesn't. Obviously has a lot of ramifications of, well, we detect through your DNA testing that you are going to eventually, you know, grow a third leg out of your head. And that is no good for society. We're going to cut you off with that. So you're not included, but you are over here because you're big and you're strong and you're whatever. And so we kind of become this, you know, we're trying to shoot again for a quote unquote master race without invoking World War II. That always seems really, really terrible to me, but I'm not so convinced that we would ever get to a stage where the other thing happens, where I can see us getting greedy about wanting to be perfect and only the best survive and all this other kind of stuff. But I never quite see a day where we're comfortable just flipping switches to you know, cut some guy off because he's robbing a liquor store. He's in the middle of the robbery. It seems like there's too much mitigating circumstances involved in everything that to just go flip and you're gone.
Well, but it's not flip and you're gone. It's flip and you're no longer protected from disease and immortality. I think that's the interesting part of this theory, is it's not an execution switch. It's a, you know what, you've just opted out of the right to live forever. You've just opted out of the right to be free from disease.
Well, in that case, I'm all for it. Vote it in. But you know what I mean? Like, if it meant killing them, that's one thing. But if it meant like, I'm trying to imagine what this would be like. Somebody's caught in the act of robbing something, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, my arm itches, and I think I'm getting a cold. I mean, is that kind of how, what would happen? They would just sort of, maybe not right
chicken
away.
Chicken pox.
Right.
Well, I mean, with any program, there's going to be a bunch of options that the powers that be can switch on and off. I mean, okay, suddenly your ability to walk is cut off. Now, run away from the cops.
Mm. Wow.
And there's going to be. So you're saying it can be remotely activated, you said?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
That's the only way that you would be able to use it properly. Maybe there's a new section of the police force called...
Right. It is very, very Minority Report-esque, like you said, Scott.
I imagine there'll be a thriving marketplace in jailbroken nanobots.
But like the idea that a cop could say,
nanobots, I like it.
They use tasers now to stop a guy from running. So the idea that they would use something that shut down your legs and your motor function or something, even just temporarily, so they could get you under arrest and keep you from hurting other people as you flee the scene or whatever. I like that a lot, actually.
When reprogramming your nanobot is a crime, only criminals will have reprogrammable nanobots.
Right. And the more you know, Tom,
the more you know. I think it would be great if everything had nanotechnology in it, not just living things, but also inanimate objects. Like you could make maybe change a table or change a house or a wall or something like that. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, nanotechnology paint.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Love it.
All right, well, let's turn to you, Nicole, and get your longer view prediction. When you look into the long-term future, into the hazy mists, what forms do you see?
Okay, so this is actually a big wish I had when I was younger, and I was a very idealistic youth. But I kind of don't want there to be a passport or any means of barrier to entry to other countries, I guess. And I guess in 100 or so years, I'm thinking the community, the world would have grown small enough, you know, with Facebook and the internet and all of this like web social communities, that the idea of a passport, the idea that you need legal documentation to enter in a country, would be kind of passé, would be kind of an archaic concept. And this is just crazy dreaming here, but I'm just hoping that would be a way to do that without needing a passport, essentially. I mean, the thing is, you can do it already with some countries, right? You don't need a visa to go to certain countries. But I think, you know, in the future, that just won't be a need for a passport.
Well, we talk about in the show constantly about chips being embedded in our heads, or you know, other technologies like that. Seems like that would lead into something like this if we could come up with a unified, non-hackable. And again, there's the issue of stuff getting hacked. This always comes up on the show about, you know, how secure could this stuff really be? Could you take a terrorist and pry out the chip he has and put in a legitimate one? Could it be reprogrammed in some other way? But barring all of that. It's those technologies, I think, that would one day allow us to just simply get on a plane, fly to another country, walk through a little gate, have a go, boop, he's good, and you're in. And you don't have this issue of, oh, I lost my papers. Not like you can say, oh, I lost the prefrontal cortex of my brain and my chip was in it. It doesn't really work that way. So I like that idea. And I like the idea of this working across the board. Everyone talks about, oh, I want to just walk into a grocery store, get my bags, walk through a little gate and have it know exactly what I have and charge me through some chip. It seems like that one chip, I mean, maybe the chip is the singularity. Maybe finally this embedded thing that is our identity, our ability to pay, our ability to be responsible for things or whatever, is finally that thing that unifies humanity and stops putting up all these walls. It gets rid of language barriers. I love that whole track of thought. So yours seems to fit nicely in that.
Yep. Well, that's essentially what I'm thinking.
Well, are you thinking no passport necessary or just no paper necessary?
No passport necessary.
I don't even need a chip. I should just be able to go where I want to go.
Yeah, like the idea of a chip is definitely a way to get around that. But I'm thinking I'm just thinking the whole idea of a world where there needs to be barriers, that you have to go through certain processes to get into a country. And I'm just saying, like, in a world where, you know, hopefully we trust each other enough to just enter each other's countries without needing all of these regulations, into the sort of
one
open society,
world,
I guess.
Emperor.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily have to have one world government to make that happen, do we?
No. Not one world government. And it's just that we have several different governments, I'm thinking, in 700 years. But it will still be just easy. It will just be easy. Just drive, like driving from California to Nevada, you know, like driving from California to Canada, Mexico,
Utah.
Yeah. What if I want to get fruit out of California? Because right now that's a huge pain in the butt. Huge pain. Like, they'll stop you. They'll check your car. Last time I went through California, they checked my, they didn't ransack it, but they went through my car and the border guys and checked for fruit.
Do you have any fruit to declare?
It was weird. Like, I still don't quite understand that. I guess there's issues with
fruit flies,
parasites, fruit flies. Yeah,
mostly about like that. It mostly started around the fruit flies.
Yeah, still
California to Utah by way of Mexico.
It's 2010, man. Fruit flies be damned. I'm saying they should.
What
just...
you do, Scott? You take your illegal nectarines and you drive them down to Tijuana. Then you go cut over.
My illicit nectarines. That's brilliant.
I like this idea of not needing passports. I know it's not practical immediately. I know there's huge security concerns. We can't even fly from California to Utah without showing identification and going through all kinds of ridiculous screening. And I don't mean to say that the security is ridiculous, but some of the screening is ridiculous. They just banned printer cartridges over 16 ounces from going on planes. Because somebody sneaked a bomb into a printer cartridge. It just seems so ill thought out. Even pilots are starting to rebel against the backscatter scanners. Anyway, I don't think we're anywhere close to that, but I do think that we should have that. I think we should have free trade and freedom of movement and the ability to benefit everyone in the long run. It's just sort of getting over this idea that I'm somehow going to protect my area against all comers. We gave that up with economics. We realized that if I try to produce all the goods and services myself and not buy anything from anyone else, it's actually bad for me and the world. And we don't do that anymore. And I think you're right. I think eventually we'll get that way with movement. I think we're fairly close right now. We actually have real good freedom of movement, but we still have this kind of heritage. Yeah, we have this heritage of control. And some of it is necessary. I mean, you do want to be able to track the criminals, right?
Yeah. I mean, I understand it. It's just that, you know, I don't think that I don't think that the whole legal, I don't think that necessarily stops crime, necessarily. The whole freedom of movement. I don't think that necessarily stops anything.
Restriction of movement doesn't stop crime.
It doesn't stop anything.
All right, let's move on to our crazy ass predictions. And when Nicole, we'll stick with you. One really far out there forecast, like in 2,000 years, we'll all be made of cars or whatever. What do you got?
We'll all be made of cars? That's crazy. Okay.
It's the crazy prediction.
Crazy. Okay, so this is what I'm thinking. In the crazy, crazy far off future, we'll finally figure out that there are aliens. There is extraterrestrial life. But they will not be in the form that we think they will be. They will not be little gray beings or whatever. They won't be giant floating brains like in Futurama. But I think they'll be in the form of mythological creatures. Now, hear me out, because we have all these ideas of centaurs, of you know, crazy one-eyed ogres, right?
So Cyclops, centaurs, satyrs, fairies. Gotcha. Right. Unicorns.
Unicorns, exactly. So we have all these mythological creatures in our heads. And I think part of why we have these ideas of mythological creatures is because they have been transmitted to us in some kind of subconscious way through years and centuries of like wave, brain waves sent to us. And they've just been embedded in our heads of these creatures. And then when we finally see them, they'll be in the form of these creatures that we have in our heads. Centaurs, Cyclops, you know, maybe a combination of the two. Maybe Cyclops, Centaurs, you know, unicorns, flying
Cyclorns.
I love this. This is one of my favorite predictions we've had on the show. I think it's because...
Those will be our aliens. Those will be our alien overlords, will be like these mythological creatures.
Are you not worried that they'll come in the form of small teddy bears with symbols on their chests or any other number of cultural impacting visualizations? Like, why just mythological creatures? Why not, you know, why won't they look like Mork and Mindy? Or why won't they look like, I don't
Ozzie
know...
Ozzie and Harriet.
Yeah, Ozzie or some other thing.
No, these mythological creatures have to be born out of like ancient times, like in the years of before television, you know.
Maenads and dryads and naiads.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my.
And
polishing my mistress unicorn's hoof in chains.
Banner ads, Tom. Don't Hadgesis, forget banner ads.
Flying the skies. Yeah.
I really do like this prediction. I love, you know what, you're playing on the thing that I love about Stargate, the lore of Stargate. I didn't really love the movie. I thought the show was great. I think it continues to be great. But this idea that like ancient Egyptian gods were not the ideas of men. These were actual beings that came with flying ships that looked like pyramids and these guards that looked like Ra and looked like, you know, these other mythological creatures. And so they built a culture around that event of that visit. And that's always been really, really cool and interesting to me. And what you've said here, this could be a book or something. I mean, it totally could.
Yeah,
it reminds me of Neil Gaiman's American Gods book is very similar to this idea. And I totally dig that. I don't necessarily know if I want your future, but I like the idea of that.
Why? You don't like unicorns as aliens?
I'm afraid they'll be terrible, terrible creatures. Oh. Rip us to shreds with their vestigial horn.
This there is a book called Gods of the Dawn, Scott, if you've never heard of it. I think it's from the 70s. It's not fiction. It's actual message of the pyramids and how, you know, it was aliens who built them. And one day they will show man how to build a new society. So, you know, that's where they kind of stole that idea for Stargate. There's also what's his name? The guy who writes all of the, Whitley Strieber, who writes all of the talk to the aliens, stuff. He has postulated that our alien visitations are continuations throughout time. And it was elves and fairies in the olden days that were actually just aliens visiting us, and so we've changed our depiction of them to fit our current mythologies, and now we call them aliens, but they're actually, you know, visitors from another dimension or whatever.
I love that idea, but it kind of sucks to be the guy that came up with Stonehenge or the guy that figured out how to make the pyramids work. If somebody's just going to go, the stuff that's real hard, that was alien. So we don't know how a guy did it. And the guy who did it is probably just going, oh my gosh, dude, give me some freaking credit. I built the pyramid. I figured out how to make it work. It'd be the worst.
5,000. Go ahead,
Ron. That idea is actually explored in Changeling the Lost, which is a role-playing game by White Wolf Publishing. Pick it up, check it out. It's really interesting how they take the idea that, you know, these people are being kidnapped and changed into creatures that we've known in the past, mythological beings, and some of them are actually being transformed into alien greys and things that we see on TV.
Steve Wozniak's already suffering this right now. And so is Paul Allen, because there's lots of theories that we got the computer revolution because the aliens gave us the tech when they crashed at Roswell. Woz and Paul are like, no, man, we worked hard on this personal computer revolution, okay? Jeez, yeah. Give us some credit.
This internet is alien technology.
Totally is. That's true. Google, totally alien.
Everything that works, everything that works well, we all want to blame on something greater and bigger. And it's a little sad that that's true, but it's also a whole lot of fun. So this is a great idea. And I think we should push for a future where our alien visitors have one big eye.
Let's do it. I welcome our cyclopean overlords. Let's move on to you, Ron. Time frame doesn't matter. Just your craziest prediction. Take the leap. What do you got?
Okay. Society, especially American society, is getting to the point where we are throwing lawsuit after lawsuit against each other. Eventually, and I think this idea is explored in several sci-fi television shows, cartoons, but eventually, if you win, your attorney will have to suffer whatever... I'm sorry. If you lose, your attorney will have to suffer whatever fate your punishment is. So that way the lawyer, the attorney, is not going to be representing people on these
frivolous lawsuits
to the point where you're not going to be represented if, you know, you're throwing a lawsuit out there for something stupid.
But won't this stop them from representing anybody whose nanobot got turned off?
Yeah.
Problem.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could see it, and no lawyers would want to take any death penalty cases if that were the case. Just on the off chance you lose, like you gotta have
the death penalty as well,
right? So there's got to be some. I don't know. I like the idea. I guess what I'm saying is, I like the idea of the lawyer having to bear a little bit of responsibility and not just be like, I make money either way, I don't care. Like, I'm totally with you on that. But maybe there just needs to be some kind of hedge.
What about if a dude gets thrown in prison and it was because of an overzealous prosecutor who maybe, you know, got a little too excited about whatever, exposing certain loopholes and something to make sure he got a conviction. And the guy who went to jail was later exonerated through DNA testing or something else and found not to be guilty of the thing he was sent there for. Would you, in your future of legal strangeness, do you see them swapping places? Like that guy getting a phone call and then sorry, Bill. Turns out that guy you put in jail, he's innocent. So, you know, put on your greens and meet us in front of, you know, the prison in 10 minutes. I mean, how does that work?
If that were the case, then we would never have a prosecutor. No one would want to prosecute.
We will run free.
Just in case. But, I mean, you'd have a lot better of a chance of getting a good defense. You would not have issues with... How do I put this? The prosecution would... I'm dying here.
The prosecution is got a stake in it. What it sounds like.
Well, how about this? If the defendant loses the death penalty case, the attorney gets his life cut by half. How about that?
Of his immortal life?
Or like a few years cut off his life, like his life expectancy or something.
Or even something more physical. Okay, you can't use your left arm for 5 years.
How about you just don't get paid? You lose a case, no money. It's the law. They don't have to pay you.
Brilliant.
Oh, that's boring.
That would hurt.
Everybody works on contingency.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think we get a lot of legal talk on this show about, you know, what the future will hold for us legally, what society will shift to make things more complicated or strange. The idea that we could make lawyers more accountable in some way, regardless of whether that's a far-fetched way of doing it, I think is a good idea. Like, could we get some of that now, please? Kind of is where I'm coming from on this. So, crazy ass or not, I would like my I would like my near future to be filled with more accountability on the part of lawyers. And I'm not saying they're all like this. I'm not broad blanket statementing this. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, I think in Europe, and again, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but I think in Europe and in other parts of the world, there aren't as many frivolous lawsuits because there's a contingency that there's some kind of barrier to entry. So maybe there is. Maybe we should start with that. Just don't make it as easy to start frivolous lawsuits.
I was reading, I am reading The Once and Future King by T.H. White, and at one point he's talking about King Arthur trying to put in the justice system, and he makes an equivalency of changing from trial by champion, right? Where if you're accused of a crime, you have a knight go and fight a tilt, and whoever wins the tilt wins the case, and everyone's like, well, that's not fair. We're going to switch to this system where we argue it out. And one person objects and says, well, then it's no different. So in the case with the knight, you just hire the strongest knight, and whoever can hire the strongest knight wins the case. With this, it's not going to be any different. Whoever has the most money can hire the best arguers and win the case. It's just a tilt of arguing.
Mm. So that's basically what we have right now.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever has the ability to think more logically than the other person wins the case.
Yeah. And more money gives you a better chance, not doesn't determine it 100%, but it gives you a better chance of hiring somebody who has a better logical arguing talent.
Yeah, we like to think that that's not true, but I think it kind of is. I think it's just a matter of, I don't know, if you want the best plastic surgery, you get the best plastic surgery surgeon, or you don't, and you risk, you know, not having very good lips when you turn 60 or whatever. So yeah, I don't know why I'm using that as a comparison. It kind of came out of nowhere, but I think it applies across the board. If you want the ones that have the money to get the best thing, are going to get the best thing. And I don't know how you change that.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah, basically.
Sort of. All right. Let's move on to the four questions. This is the segment where we hit each of our guests to the face. No, I really have to rewrite my script script here. This is the segment where each of our guests face four rapid-fire questions about the future. We ask that you not stop and think, just answer with whatever comes to mind. It's free association time. Scott Johnson, start us off.
All right. These four questions are for Ron Loop, the infinite loop. Ron, are you ready?
I am ready.
Here we go. Will all lawyers in the future be Southern gentleman chickens?
yes, but they'll all be colonels.
Oh, good. Perfect.
I'm getting hungry just to listen to this.
That was a little Futurama reference for Nicole, who I can tell is a fellow Futurama nut.
Futurama, strong.
Right. Represent. Number two, if the Planet of the Apes thing really happens, what will you say when you see the Statue of Liberty sticking out of the beach?
Lady, put your clothes on.
Nice. So far you're winning four questions, doing very well. Number three, if the crew of the Enterprise could really circle around the sun to turn back time, why did Kirk never seem to get a tan?
SPF 5 million. He kept it in the back room. In nice. His captain's quarters.
You cannot change the laws of tanning, Captain.
That's right. UV protection in the future is amazing. Finally, fourth question. What will the next big hurricane of destruction or destructive significance be named?
Next big hurricane, destructive.
Because we know they'll just give it some girl's name, but what would you name it?
Yeah. Betty.
Okay.
Oh, Betty.
Another girl's name. Love it. Nasty old Betty.
I have an Very aunt nice. Betty.
Do you really? So do I. Yeah,
she's not a hurricane. She's a very nice lady.
Mine will rock you like a hurricane, but that's a different story.
That's a whole different thing. Wow. I'd have to hear that story one of these days. All right. Let's turn to you, Nicole Lee. Are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one. Which will we see first, a real-life version of Superman or Spider-Man?
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man
because he's based on Peter Parker, which is a human. Superman because it's an alien, and that's less likely.
I tricked you into declaring yourself a Marvel fan. No.
Okay. Damn it. Damn it.
Question number two. How and when will we realize that we're all just living in a simulation?
How will we realize?
How and when?
How and when? Oh. We'll realize it when we look up one day and there'll be a giant face looking down on us. And it'll be asking us, why are you doing that?
Control-Alt-Delete. Question number three. Describe what it will be like to live on a planet populated entirely by geeks.
Ooh, that's a good one. Dang.
Planet of the geeks.
Okay. How it will be like?
Yeah, just to, it doesn't have to be a long description. Just a quick vignette.
Okay. So I'm distracted by the chat room that says the major need for deodorant. I would say it would be very, very efficiently run, but there'll be a lot of be very efficiently run in the big things like government, economics, like all of those are great. But there'll be small little problems like should I go to Comic Con this year or next year? And, you know, it's very, very small, minute problems would be like very big problems. I think.
Which Comic Con are you talking about? Comic Con Western Zone or Comic Con Northern Zone?
Like those are the major problems of the day.
All right, and question. That's a good answer. I think Comic Cons will rule the planet of the geeks. Question number four: under what conditions will we first leave the solar system?
Could you repeat that question?
Under what conditions? I feel like I'm at a spelling bee now. Under what conditions will we first leave the solar system?
When the aliens come and they're unicorns and centaurs, and they want the Earth, right? They want the Earth because of the lush fields and the lakes and the water. So they ask us to leave because, you know, they don't want us around.
Hop on my back and we'll ride away. Yay! Into the universe where there's no oxygen and you die. Our planet.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
All right. Well done. Thank you, Nicole Lee. You've successfully completed four questions.
Thank you.
Where are you going? What are you doing now?
Right now, I am...
I'm going to Disneyland.
Right now I'm at work, so I'm just gonna go back and work some more.
All right, well, yeah, we're all done. Thank you guys both. Really appreciate you hanging out. Nicole, you say you're gonna leave work. I know you work at CNET. Let folks know some of the things you do there.
Yeah, so I review cell phones and smartphones for CNET. Check out our CNET podcast, dialedin.cnet.com, for all of that information. For all of my information, you can go to NicoleLee.net, which is all of my Twitter and stuff on there.
And Ron, the Infinite Loop, thank you also for being on the show. Let people know about Darth Nerd some more.
Well, I'm in the first stages of the podcast, getting all the artwork and intro, outro, that type of stuff prepared. But that should be going up within the next 2-3 weeks. I should be recording my first episode soon. So,
coming to an iTunes store near you.
Excellent. Yeah. DarthNerd.com. Don't miss it. Scott Johnson.
Geeks on Glee.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget Geeks on Glee as well. It's a great trio. You'll like them.
Yeah, it's fun. Even if you're kind of getting sour on Glee or you don't like it anyway, there's something about that show that is weird. You guys are so into the source material that it's infectious. I highly recommend it. It's good stuff.
And Scott, do you need to highly recommend anything else before we go?
Well, I have a show called Geeks on Gleek, the Wonder Monkey from the Super Friends.
Wait, what?
No, I don't. I really don't have that. But I do have lots of other shows over at frogpants.com. I do want to make sure people are tuning in every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, listening to Tom and I, or watching us, rather, live right here on the Twit Network, talking about the geekier things of life on Current Geek Weekly. We don't pimp that enough, and it's time we pimped it again. So join us this Friday. You should have a great show.
All right. I will be there. Scott will be there. Mm. You should be there as well. And thank you all for being here. You can also get in touch with us at our blog, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll predict. We'll see you next week.
Yes, indeed.
But it's only 32 years away.